I know that this is just a filthy figment of my diseased imagination.
Live from New York.
I was hoping to interest you in improving your mind.
Science, history, paranormal activity, mysteries of the ages.
A lot of scary things can happen.
Sit back and get ready to be
scared. We're perfectly ordinary Americans.
What's up, suckers? Today is Tuesday, September 8th, 2009, and you're listening to Scared on the Airwaves with your hosts, the Scared Crew, part paranormal investigators, part urban explorers. And tonight, we're partial to Brian doing the opening. But since he's not here, you guys are stuck with me. So that's what you get. Hi, I'm Chris Manciso, and tonight on the mic with me is, to my right, is Jason Porcino.
Dancing in the dark.
To my left is our newest member, Brooke Haramaya.
Hey everybody, what's up?
Chatting with you, hopefully with relevant things, is Greg in the chat room. And our audio engineer is Mr. Paul DeGennaro. So before we get started, actually, there's a couple of things I'd like to pimp out. First off, as we've mentioned numerous occasions, we got Haunted Con is coming up September 24th through 26th in Prescott, Arizona. Myself and Brian will be there. We'll be giving a lecture on urban exploration. There'll be some other cool guests there as well, such as Scotty Roberts and Chris Moon. So for tickets to Haunted Con, you can go to www.hauntedcon.com. That's www.hauntedcon.com.
Is that on the internet?
That is on the internet.
Okay.
Also, I'd like to mention that we have finally finished our episode at East Bridgewater. So Scared at the East Bridgewater Town Hall is now currently available on DVD for purchase.
Yeah.
So go to www.scaredonline.com and Woo-hoo! Order your copy today.
And that's online as well.
That's online as well.
That's on the computer.
Yes, it is. Now, not only can you watch Scared episodes on our website, but now you can also watch them on PTN. That's the Paranormal Television Network. So you can watch episodes of Scared, other cool like documentaries, and you know they feature a lot of cool shows from everything from cryptozoology, UFOs, paranormal. PTN is pretty much all paranormal all the time. So to watch our show and other shows on PTN, go to www.paranormaltvnetwork.com.
On the computer.
That's also on the computer, yes. So yeah, we just passed Labor Day. So how was everybody's weekend?
Delivering babies all day.
Delivering babies?
How many people went into labor yesterday? It was horrible.
What'd you guys do for the holiday weekend?
I had a wonderful weekend, actually. Sunday night, I went on a boat party, and I had to wear all white. It was called a white party, and I met some really, really awesome people.
Was the leader of it Adolf?
No.
A white power party? What is it?
But we had a DJ, and we had some very interesting guests show up, and we really had a great time, so that was pretty cool.
That's cool. What'd you do for the holiday weekend there, Jay?
I'm celebrating today, because today, September 8th, 1989, today's the 20th anniversary of the release of Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue.
Nice. A great album, by the way.
Yes. We had a Paul and I did a little thing to that on our radio show last night.
That's right. You have a radio show? You want to plug that real quick?
Yeah, sure. Where it's gameconradio.com. That's on the computer. Every Eastern time, every Monday from 11 to 1, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m., we do some rock and roll and talking about rock and roll.
Very interesting stuff.
And now we're going to get thrown off the air for plugging.
Actually, I did forget. I know you guys listen to Scared on the Airwaves, but Dark Plains Radio actually has a really cool lineup of some other shows, and I hope you guys listen to some of these other shows on darkplainsradio.com. Now, Brooke, I understand you were recently took a visit to the Shanley Hotel.
I did. I was very excited. I finally got a chance to go. I felt like I was the only person that hadn't been there yet. And I finally got the opportunity 2 weekends ago on August 29th. There was a girls-only pajama party.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Of course, there was a guy there. Sorry, owner. Billy. besides Sal, this poor gentleman, Billy, showed up, did not realize that it was girls only, so we ragged on him pretty much all night. But I had a really funny thing happen to me on the way to the Shanley. I drove by myself, and it was about a two-and-a-half-hour drive, and about 20 minutes before I got there, the last direction on my GPS was to go...
The last direction? What?
The last direction... That's a D in front of that.
Okay.
The last direction said to go on 209 North. So as I got to the intersection, it was closed off by the cops. Something had happened. So I said, no big deal. The GPS will recalculate. It recalculated. That exit was also closed off. So I said, okay. Recalculated again. It said, make a left on this street. So I'm getting closer to the street. I go to make the left, and I stop, and I said, is this really the street they want me to go down? I think it was called Allen Street or something. And there was, like, no road. So I'm like, the GPS says 0 feet, make a left. So I said, okay, I'll do it.
Did you just turn through, like, a cornfield or something?
No, it wasn't concrete. It was rocks, okay. Branches, ditches.
That's what they make cars for. You drive right over that stuff, man.
So I have a little car for you. Those of you that don't know, I don't have a 4x4.
Brooke has a toy car.
I have a toy car. It's a mini Scion. And I make the left, and it's getting worse and worse and worse as I'm going down the road. All of a sudden, my car's at a 45-degree angle, 2 feet of water, branches covering the road.
Wow.
My car is skidding sideways. I'm going, we are going to die. And all of a sudden...
Brooke's schizophrenic. We're going to die. It's just her in the car.
It was her and
the teddy bear,
like, in the front seat.
Me and my car are going to die. And it's 1.7 miles of this. And I'm going, oh, my God, it's getting worse. It's getting worse. I'm, you know, 45-degree angle it. I'm sideways. I'm this and that. All of a sudden, I pop out into this guy's driveway. And I look left, and I look right. And the next thing I know, I'm on Highway 209. 3 minutes away from the Shanley.
Hey, well, at least you survived. So, you had a little adventure there, at least.
I did. And let me tell you, we had a great time. I met a lot of great girls there, some of which I had already met, some of which I had been talking to online, and I got the chance to meet. So I want to give a big shout-out to all those girls that are in the chat room right now. I had an awesome time.
Hi, girls.
Hi, girls.
Well, well, well.
And the only other thing I want to say is one significant thing that did happen to me at the Shanley.
Okay.
Right before we started investigating, I had done an initial sweep walkthrough of the whole building. And I walked up to the third floor, and I was shining my flashlight in some of the rooms. And all of a sudden, I heard this violent shaking of a doorknob behind me. And I thought somebody was doing an EVP session, and they were coming out of a room. So I didn't think anything of it until I turned around and realized it was the closet that had been rattling, and there was nobody else up on the third floor with me. So I thought that was pretty significant.
Well, I know from our numerous visits to the Shanley that, the third floor is supposedly pretty active, although I have yet to experience anything personally up there. Mm-hmm. Other people have said, yes, the third floor is active, and there's several spirits up there. So I'm not surprised.
I think maybe ghosts, after thinking about it, that ghosts, maybe the reason why you never see or feel anything is because maybe they're scared of you.
They're scared of me.
They're like, ooh, I'm going to stay in the closet.
The ghost didn't feel like coming out of the closet that night.
The most unintimidating man, me, they're afraid of. Okay.
You're like, eh, come on, ghost.
Come on, what are you doing?
They're scared of you, bro.
Well, as you know, our show is about the paranormal. And today, I think we're going to talk about some equipment that we use during our paranormal investigations. Now, we've kind of touched upon this topic in shows past, but I think today that we should delve a little deeper into why we use some of this equipment that we do on our investigations. For instance, an EMF detector, like, where did it originate from? We know EMF detectors are used to detect electromagnetic fields, obviously. But how did it originate, and why do we use it today? That's one of the questions that I want an answer to. Also, stuff like dowsing rods, which I find interesting, although less scientific than, let's say, the EMF detector or the audio recorder. I'm just going to read a little bit. So if I sound like I'm reading, it's probably because I am. obviously, I did not commit all of these all of this knowledge to memory, so I just kind of have to read you what I have in front of me. Okay, this is a little bit about dowsing rods first. The ancient art of rhabdomancy. Yes, that's what it was called back in the early days, as it was known. It had been practiced for hundreds, maybe thousands of years. At one time, people used intuition with these objects to determine where influences were coming from. Since then, I guess it is, you know, it says mankind has evolved and that kind of inner sense has diminished, at least for most of us. I know I don't have any psychic ability that I'm really aware of. But ever since written records have been kept, the art of dowsing rods have been recorded. Ancient Egyptians used them. Babylonians used them, used split reeds. Even the early Chinese emperors used them. And the whole art of feng shui, it's all about flow and how things like flow with the atmosphere and the surroundings. So all that, I think, also has to do with dowsing rods. Does anybody have kind of an opinion on why we use this stuff today and how relevant it really is?
I think the one common theme in the few things that you mentioned and the other things that we use, I mean, aside from any type of audio or video recording, any type of this stuff seems to have one common theme, and that seems to have something to do with detecting some type of electromagnetic or some type of energy.
Yes.
That has something to do with that. And that goes to something that we've mentioned many and many a times, in which I believe, which people refer to as the soul or the ghost or whatever it is, that we know for a fact the human body is run off of electricity. It gives off a pulse. We've mentioned many times in the past that energy does not get destroyed. It gets displaced. These are scientific facts. Mm-hmm. That when the body dies, it makes perfect sense that that energy that was...
It's dispersed, the energy
that was keeping your heart pumping and your lungs moving is dispersed. Now, whether that energy stays together in, say, like maybe some blob or some form, something where, you know, where it doesn't scatter all over the place, where it doesn't have to necessarily stay in a human shape, but maybe like some type of orb or blob-shaped thing that happens to, these energy actually happens to stay in somewhat of a form together, whether it's visible or not.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be that this equipment... is stuff that would detect that.
Now, what I understand with dowsing rods, okay, use metal rods to detect water.
All these rods.
Here's my point. Okay. Use like metal rods to detect water, and like you said, disturbances maybe in the electromagnetic field. I understand metal is a conductor. Yeah, you can totally. I see how that's possible, but like people used to use twigs and sticks. I think that's more when it was with the kind of human intuition thing going on, that maybe that was just kind of symbolic. Those sticks were kind of symbolic or something.
See, I can understand the metal because, and say to find water, because say an underground stream, there are a lot of rocks. There's certain things that give off electricity, and that stuff, obviously, water is a conductor of that.
Yes.
So if you have certain rocks underground and it's giving off some type of natural radiation... Or, Paul, I don't know if you could find it. There's a type of rock where a lot of times it's found in basements of houses.
Limestone.
There's limestone. Right. And the thing is, it'll give off an energy, and maybe that is attracting it, the water using as a conductor. Now, as far as using sticks, I don't understand why that would work.
That's why, like I said, I think it came down to more that kind of human intuition or psychic ability.
Yes.
And the stick was maybe just, like I said, a symbol. Or something like that.
Like some guy already found
focus.
Like some guy found the water already, and then he didn't tell anyone, and he's like, wait a minute, I'm gonna use my magical powers to find it, and then he'll just walk around for 15 minutes and go, the water's over there, and they're like, oh my god, Billy's magic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe people didn't want to be considered to have those powers, and you could use a stick to do it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, especially if you're thinking about like 1600s or whatever it was with like the Salem witch trials, things like that, you know. People would overreact if they saw something like that in Salem, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah, right? Definitely.
They'd flip out. Yeah, you're in league with the devil, you know what I mean?
I often wonder what the significance is of the dowsing rods to cross. Like, is it X marks the spot? I mean, why is it that they have to cross for that to signify something?
Is that maybe where did that term come from? Is that where that term came from?
X marks the spot.
I mean,
sure.
We've been finding out over the course of this show a lot of sayings and stuff. It's weird that we've been finding out, like, that's where these some of these things came from. Like, the whole thing about, like, for whom the bell tolls and the whole, like, things like that. It's like, that's, you know, what the term wake means at a, like, at a wake, which a lot of people refer to as a viewing.
Yes.
And a wake was because people would tend to wake up 3 days later because the doctors thought they were dead. So, it's, you know, the bell was a rope coming out of the actual coffin.
Yes.
And the reason why there was a guy, actually, why would you have someone watch over a graveyard? Because the guy would be sitting there and a bell would ring and turn to the guy was buried alive. So
that's,
maybe
that's happened on more than one occasion.
Right. And I'm saying, so maybe that term could mean, that's could be possible what that means. I don't know, but.
Or maybe, I mean, it could just be like they, maybe the rods cross because of the energy causes it to do that. Now, we use these rods today, people, maybe not we per se, but people use these rods to communicate with spirits.
Maybe the energy, maybe, you know, like say like something made the rods become magnetized, which would cause them to pull together. So maybe the energy crossing them
energizes the rods. A good little theory.
I know I'm smart when I can, when I try.
When you try, when you put your mind to it.
I mean, they say that psychics, supposedly, I mean, this would make sense, of course, that if psychics use the dowsing rods, that it's more effective.
Right.
Now, I saw that you guys did use dowsing rods in your Shanley episode.
Deb Laurie was using
dowsing rods. Deb Laurie was using the dowsing rods, and I know that Brian tried them. And, I mean, that's what this is all about, to be open-minded and try all these things. It doesn't have to be electronical and, you know, it doesn't have to be...
What's that word, Brooke?
Electronical. I just made it up. you know, it doesn't have to be electronic to work.
Right. I mean, this is something that has been used thousands of years.
Thousands of years. Exactly.
What was it originally used for? To find water?
To find water, to find treasure, to find metals, stuff like that.
Where did it originate? Do we know who?
It just says it's been around for like thousands of years. Huh. So... Again, especially and back then too, it was those people with psychic abilities who, I guess, who kind of started using it. And if you look, you know, people with psychic abilities, they're known as prophets. They're known as, you know what I mean? They've been around, seers. They've been around since probably the beginning of man.
Right.
And maybe back then more people had that ability. And as we kind of evolved, I think we've lost some of that being in tune with nature.
It's unnecessary to live. It's just like we don't need to be that animalistic to survive.
Right. I mean, if you look at, you know, the animal kingdom, you know, if there's an earthquake or there's a tidal wave or certain changes in atmospheric conditions, these animals will book, man. Before the earth starts trembling, before we're aware of it, these animals are gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's that instinct.
Yeah, they have that kind of primal instinct.
Well, we don't need it anymore because we've become so dependent upon machines. It's like, yeah, our early warning system is that there's an entire international agency set up that detects earthquakes or tsunamis. You know what I mean? Unless you live in Southeast Asia because they don't even have clean water or oxygen. So they'd welcome a wave hitting them for a bath. But,
oh God!
Kidding. It's, come on. I don't want it. The point is that we don't use those instincts because we don't need them. It's almost like
they've become obsolete to us.
Hey man, a human that acts like an animal is terrifying. But the because we're like, oh, that guy's a maniac. It's like, no, that's what humans used to act like because
we used to
have to attack a giant boar that could kill you. Now there'd be 10 of us in the room going and running away from the boar. Meanwhile, if this was like 700 years ago, the guy would dive on top of it and break its neck.
True.
And if we see a human now act like that, you're like, this guy's acting like an animal. It's like, no, he's just probably more in touch with his animal side, his natural side, actually, I should say.
And I kind of feel bad because I feel like we're getting away from that too much with the paranormal field. That, you know, you just pick up a meter and say, oh, there's a ghost in the corner, and you forget to use your five senses and possibly your sixth sense to sense something.
Very good point. And actually, I was just about to bring it up, so very good, Brooke. I'm not as
science-oriented.
Maybe that was psychic. That was your first psychic.
Psychic.
That was your first psychic thing you ever did.
I'm not as science-oriented as, let's say, Brian is. You know, personally, I believe there's so much stuff out there that we don't know. To rely strictly on science is almost kind of foolish. I think the most important, like Brooke said, the most important piece of equipment you can bring on any paranormal investigation is your own five senses. And I'll speak personally. I've said this from day one. What I've been looking for, you know, since we started doing our investigations is my own personal paranormal experience. Now, recently I had that at the Grand Midway Hotel. And yes, there were meters that were kind of acting strange at the same time. You know, our EMF detector was going off. But if that EMF detector wasn't going off, I still would have felt what I felt.
Right.
And yes, I still would have been convinced that something was there. And, you know, if it happened once, I got the chills up my spine. And me being a skeptic, yeah, I passed it off. All right, it's a case of creeps, you know, psychological, whatever. But when it happened multiple times, then even I had to go, whoa, dude, you know, this is effed up. There's something here, man.
But you know what? Roll back a second.
Yes.
What is a case of the creeps? That could be your natural instinct. Why would
could
you?
Be.
That's what I'm saying is, like, that whole thing is like, that's your gut telling you something's wrong.
That's your personal EMF detector indicator.
Yeah. Right. So I'm saying a case of the creeps may not just be, well, I passed it off because it was a case of the creeps. The case of the creeps was your psychic.
It could be your, like, you know, interior alert.
Could be
to
you
something.
Psyching yourself out. It could have been anything.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's what I thought. I was assuming there it's psychological. I mean, we've all been in situations where there's, you know, imminent danger and, you know, get that little tingling in your skull and it goes down, you know, but this was the kind of opposite. It started on my back and went up. Usually I get like a tingle on both sides of my skull and it'll kind of go down to my shoulders, but this actually was kind of reversed, where it started at the base of my spine and like tickled its way up my back to my head.
And then it happened again.
It happened like, dude, 5 or 6 times.
All right, so yeah, you can't pass that
I
off.
Couldn't. Even I couldn't. And I've been the diehard skeptic, you know, for a while. Yeah, this is all crap, you know.
And that whole room was going crazy. If not the detector and everybody.
I think all these meters and stuff that we use, yes, they're good for backup. And if you can get proof on them, that's great. But don't rely strictly on all this equipment that we use. You know, use your body, because your body will tell you things.
Yes.
And people use psychics. And
I'll tell you the truth. When I do these investigations, a lot of times when I feel the most, my meters don't go off at all.
Yeah. I can totally get with that. I understand that completely.
Sometimes I feel like when the meter is the quietest is when something is actually going on. Like they're either hiding or I'm sensing it more, or there's like a vortex or something. And it does not mean that my EMF detector is going off or I'm going to catch an EVP. It just means I know something's in that room.
Right. And that's good that you've learned to use that. And you kind of trust that. Because I've noticed a couple times you said, listen, my equipment isn't showing anything, but I feel something's here. I know something's here. So at least you're not just totally dependent on that. Yes, right. It's good to be scientific. And like I said, all this data that we collect is great for backup, for evidence. But just because you don't get it doesn't mean that there's nothing there.
I've gotten into the habit, actually, when we go on these investigations now, to take 5 or 10 minutes by myself to walk through the location without any meters at all and see if I get a sense for something. And then that might be where I go back later in the night with my equipment to see if I can back up what I feel. So
that's,
I do use
good.
Both.
I'm always scared.
You are. Well, you're always you're a believer, right? I mean,
I don't believe everything. I mean, I want some type of proof.
Right.
But I believe everything is possible, but I'm still scared of the dark. I still hear noises at night, and I'll have to turn the TV off for 5 minutes.
That's like a psychological thing, you think?
Well, I mean, Chris and I had an apartment for a long time, and we've lived together, and man, I used to have nightmares. You know this, man.
I know, dude.
Screaming, trashing the room, nightmares, falling out of bed. So
oh
the thing
gosh.
Is, I don't. Yeah, it was really bad. It was like, it was every night, too. Like, I would come out of the room.
You'd have, like, night terrors.
Drenched.
Dude,
like, look like I got out of the shower. Like, my everything, my clothes, I was just drenched sweating, like, and it was really bad. But my point is that I don't know whatever it's from, fear of the unknown, but everything we go on, I'm at least nervously scared. Not like terrified scared, but I'm scared. Like, I'm 33 years old, and I've been through hell in my life, and I had to sleep in the same room as Greg. As Brooke's sleeping in the murder room across the door by herself with the door closed.
Yeah, mind
and me and
you.
Greg are in there terrified.
Well, see, I think, and this is good about both you, and I noticed with Greg too. You guys are always kind of a little bit on edge. You're always a little kind of nervous, and I think that's good because it keeps your senses heightened. Where like maybe sometimes I'll be dull to things, you know, mentally, like as far as my senses go, because you know I would go into a place and be like, all right, we've been here for a couple of hours. It's, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, there's nothing here. I'm tired. You know what I mean? So, but you guys would still be like, dude, this place is nuts.
Here's the thing. I'm going to bring this up. This is for the Scared Crew. From now on, wherever we go, I want you to treat me the way the psychics are. Don't tell me anything, because once everybody starts telling me stuff, I lose it and I can't concentrate on filming. Like when I went into that demon room, see, here's the thing. I went in there when we first got there. I just booked for a camera. It's at the Grand Midway, everybody. I'm going to all the different rooms because I wanted photos, because I wanted to show them to Paul, because, you know, whatever. I just wanted to have photos of every room. And I went into this room that we refer to as the demon room. Now, I had no idea what went on in this room, what happened in this room. And I stayed in that room for about 8-10 minutes, took photos. And then Brian was like, I was going to sleep in this one room and I can't. I heard what happened. I'm like, what room? He told me what room. And I lost it. I was like, I was in there for 10 minutes.
Well, he was going to sleep in the room actually right below it.
Right.
Yes.
And the thing is, I didn't know what happened in that room until like 2 weeks ago. Like one night, Chris, you were telling me outside my house. Like, and I was like, really? Because, and the thing is, I wasn't scared or anything. Then I got scared going to the bathroom because Blair told me a baby's hand came out of the radiator and grabbed him, and he ran 3 floors up.
Well, see, that's good that you didn't know about it, and yet you stayed in there. Now, if you had that previous knowledge of what
I would have never went
transpired, yeah, you would have been.
That's
terrified.
What I'm saying. From now on, don't tell me anything, because I was fine walking to the bathroom until Blair told me a hand came out of the radiator, and then I was scared to go to the bathroom the whole night.
Right, well, that's psychological, yeah.
The good part about the
don't
scared
tell me
crew.
Anymore.
The good part about the scared crew is that we all do think very differently. See, I'm the opposite.
Totally.
I like to know everything because I debunk what I see or what I hear or what I see on a website.
Tell me when we
leave. So, by me sleeping in that room, I only chose that room because it was supposed to be the most haunted room in the hotel. I was able to say nothing happened to me that night. And in fact, the next morning, I felt so good. I asked Adam Bly, had there ever been a blessing in that room? He said, oh yeah, we just did a blessing in that room. Like a couple of weeks before. So it was kind of like I was able to prove the opposite, you know, than the haunting, because they had just cleansed that room.
I just get psyched. I psych myself out.
I think that's
that's my problem. I mean, I definitely psych myself out. And it annoys me because I can't be a filmmaker.
Well, you're scared.
You understand what I'm saying? Gotcha. Like, the only thing is, like, if you were filming me, at least you'd get a real natural reaction out of me. But me trying to interview somebody or like, let me get this camera angle and I think that a baby hand's going to come out of the wall, I'm terrified. I really am. Because if that thing grabbed me, I would have ran home.
Now, we just finished touching upon dowsing rods,
right,
which, like I said, have been used for thousands of years. Now, Brooke, I see you got some information there. Tell us about some of the newer equipment that's being used in the paranormal field today.
Okay, well, this is actually something I had not heard of before. It's called the Mel Vibe and the Mel Meter. And I do have some information on here somewhere about the name of the creator of it. But it actually came out, it was just released on June 15th, 2009. And Gary Galka is the inventor of these two pieces of equipment. And it looks like something that might be worth checking out. It's supposed to be something that detects vibration and or touch with an EMF detector attached to it. It'll apparently the Mel Vibe will also detect cold spots simultaneously. So they test it by tapping on a table. If you drop a cotton ball on a table,
that'll pick it up,
it supposedly will go off because something that sensitive will set it off.
Vibration you're talking
vibration.
About.
Okay. So for people that say, oh, I feel something on my arm or something just touched me, supposedly if you're holding this meter, it should go off.
Okay.
So I might look into either purchasing one, or if anybody in the chat room either has one or has experience using one, please give us some
what
feedback.
Is that equipment originally created for like earthquake situations, or like maybe to test like building vibrations, like, you know, like housing authority sounds like?
I believe this was actually created just for paranormal research. And if you want to read more about it, you can go to theghosthunterstore.com. And check out the Mel Vibe. I think it might be worth checking out.
All right, more on some new paranormal equipment as well as some of the old reliables when we come back from break.
Holy nightmare.
Don't touch that dial, folks. We'll be right back.
psychic, medium, healer, medical intuitive, teacher, author, and speaker. Where can you find all of these traits in one location? Go to www.spiritquesthealingcenter.com, the official site of Scared's very own Lisa Ann. Celebrating 10 years in business, Lisa Ann will be holding phone reading specials. Once again, go to www.spiritquesthealingcenter.com.
Have you been wondering what to get that special person in your life? Visit Mountain View Candleworks, your one-stop shop for candles, fountains, incense, specialty foods, and much, much more. Just visit www.mountainviewcandleworks.com. We make your candles with mountain care.
Are you wondering if the path that you've chosen is the right one for you? Or would you like to see a glimpse of what the future may hold? Tarot may be able to help you understand better the path that you're on. The cards don't lie, nor do they lead you astray, as they're a vehicle for messages from God, angels, and guides. Have your cards read for you by world-renowned tarot card master Scotty Roberts. To schedule a private reading with Scotty, visit www.tarotbyscotty.com today and find out what the cards may hold for you.
Haunted Con 2009, a paranormal conference you don't want to miss in Prescott, Arizona, September 24th, 25th, and 26th. Guest speakers at Haunted Con 2009 include A&E's Network's Chip Coffee, from Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International, Brian Harnwall, True TV's and Haunted Times Magazine's Christopher Moon, celebrity psychic Nancy Bradley. You'll meet many, many more celebrities at Haunted Con 2009 in Prescott, Arizona, this September 24th, 25th, and 26th at the historic Hotel St. Michael. To get your tickets at this intimate conference, go online to www.hauntedcon.com today. But hurry before they are sold out and you miss your opportunity to meet and learn from some of the most experienced and notable names in the paranormal field today. That's Haunted Con 2009 in Prescott, Arizona, a paranormal conference you don't want to miss.
And welcome back. I hope you enjoyed our little commercial break. And like I said, forgive all the ums, the ahs, the me not knowing what I'm really doing, because Brian's not here tonight, so you guys are kind of stuck with me leading the discussion. So if you haven't already tuned out, now might be a good time. Again, tonight we're talking about some of the paranormal equipment that we use during our investigations. We've touched upon, obviously, dowsing rods. Brooke mentions some of the newer equipment that's actually just coming out. Another thing, EMF detectors. Everybody who's a paranormal investigator has an EMF detector. But do we really know the history behind the EMF detector? Well, it was actually developed in 1833. Yeah, that's a long time ago, man. 1833, Carl Friedrich Gauss invented the first instrument to measure magnetic fields. His early magnetometer consisted of a bar magnet suspended in midair by a string.
Wow.
I mean, very simple stuff here. While it indicated the direction of the magnetic field, it offered only a crude measurement of how strong it was. So since that time, obviously, you know, developments have been made, and we can gauge how strong an electromagnetic field is.
And it was probably like 350 feet long, because that's how big things were back then. It's like, hey, look at this calculator. It filled up 17 rooms. Like, that's
I mean,
that's true.
EMF detectors were obviously not designed originally for paranormal research, paranormal evidence. We tried doing some research. I cannot find who started first using EMF detectors on paranormal investigations. So if anybody out there knows, please send it to us, because like, it's something that I really want to know. I do know, here are some lists. Here's a list of some things that EMF detectors, household uses, what they're used for. To check that cellular phones have emissions, TVs and appliances, make sure they have low emissions of electromagnetic fields, because as everyone knows, or maybe you don't, but high levels of EMFs can make you sick. They can make you hallucinate. They can make you throw up. Prolonged exposure to these things will really cause you to be sick, which is why you obviously shouldn't buy a house very close to power lines and stuff like that. Your microwave, if that's leaking, that will give off some pretty severe EMFs, and that will make you sick. And it could make you think your place is haunted because, you know, you're getting these feelings, you're seeing these visions. You know, meanwhile, it's just that kind of energy that's affecting
you. Probably why everybody's so insane now and needs pills, because you'd be carrying cell phones with us and you constantly have that you know, beaming to your head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally, man.
Well, I mean, if you notice, especially in the older buildings, there's all exposed wire in the basement.
Exactly.
So, you know, a lot of people say they feel creepy in the basement. It could be because they feel claustrophobic or whatever, but it could be attested to these high levels of EMF.
Right. I mean, we've been in places where, like Brooke said, wires are exposed. They're not housed properly, which can cause fires, shorts. It can cause electrocution if you're touching a wire that's exposed. Mm-hmm. And they are giving off very high levels of EMFs. Now, if you're sitting in that basement three hours, let's say you're doing an EVP session, or you're just sitting there monitoring equipment, you can start to be affected by that.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not sure what the exact period of time is for you to actually start becoming affected by it.
Right.
It might not be that long. It says prolonged, but what is prolonged? I mean,
can't tell you how many times I've heard people that feel that way while they're doing laundry. So if you think of it that way, maybe 20 minutes to do a load of laundry and then maybe 45 minutes to put it in the dryer. Not that you're going to sit there the whole time, but I hear so many stories of people that are reluctant to do their laundry if it happens to be in the basement, and it could be because of levels of EMF, not because something paranormal is going on.
Right. I mean, yeah, a lot of things happen. If you notice, people feel weird in basements, in attics, where maybe, you know, the wiring might not be as well shielded as other parts of the house because people aren't, you know, it's a storage attic. It's not a real walk-in, you know, attic. It's just put boxes up there. It's a crawl space, more or less. You know, who knows? But today, we do use that to hunt for ghosts, for spirits, because it was believed that if a spirit will affect the electromagnetic field, especially if it tries to manifest itself, it'll pull energy from things. It'll pull energy from, if you have something with batteries in it, wherever it can draw that energy from, it will, and it will try to manifest itself, and that can cause a meter to fluctuate.
So you get into a real realm of whether that energy has, that any energy has any sort of intelligence or memory, because water has memory.
I remember you saying that, yes.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's just fact. I mean, MIT's been working on a water drive for over 10 years. Hmm. Everything's saved in binary. Water saves stuff in binary. Now, what is to say that energy doesn't have memory or even an intelligence? Where he's saying it is drawing, is it doing it purposely? And that is the key thing about do ghosts exist or not, because I guess the definition of a ghost is an intelligence that's possibly able to communicate that is not a living creature. It's not an animal. It's not a plant. It's, you know, it's something that isn't a carbon-based life form that isn't alive. So, I mean, that's the whole thing. When this thing draws the energy, is it willingly doing this? You know what I mean?
Or is it just...
Right, I
mean, find that very interesting, because if water can, and, you know... if water can remember things, then what's to say limestone doesn't remember things, and so many buildings are built on limestone. Maybe it retains or retracts that energy into the ground, and that's why...
Think about trees, like they have rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
If there's an earthquake, it was rings. When you learn stuff, the actual shape and landscape of your brain changes.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, it actually does cause a physical... Memory is physical.
Right.
You know what I mean? The only difference is the containment system.
Right.
Our containment system is our brain inside our skull. The problem, like I said, when I learned from MIT, was the problem they were having with the water drive was containment. because it would be like plugging a monitor, and instead of having a computer tower, like where the actual, it was like a fish tank.
Wow.
Now you could stick the energy in, you could stick the information in there, but what's to keep it from just splashing? Like, you know, like,
right.
You know, your microchips will save certain things and categorize it the way your brain does. If you, the containment of it, it's the same thing. If memory is actually physical, if it can cause rings in a tree, if it can cause cracks in a rock, where you could sit there and go, this rock, this level of rock is from this era, this level of rock is from this era.
Right.
If it's physical, the problem with ghosts is the containment, because what's containing it? Do you know what I mean? So because memory is physical, the thing is are these things intelligent?
And that's a good point. Like, people talk about when they say ghosts, you know, yeah, is it intelligent? Is it residual? There's different types of hauntings. There's different types of ghosts. So there's no one term that's used to explain everything.
Well, that's the thing, is people see an orb and they're like, oh, that's an orb, or that's a trick of light. Does a ghost have to be shaped like a Civil War soldier? And I'm a ghost. My name's Jebediah. You know what I mean? Like
Jebediah.
But you know what I mean? Like, does that only constitute a ghost? Like, if I saw 15 orbs around my face in a photo, why can you sit there and go, that's definitely not a ghost? But if you saw a Civil War soldier standing behind me with the same shadowy light color, you'd be, all right, there's definitely a ghost. How can you, you know, does it have to be shaped a certain way?
I find it interesting that as we evolved as human beings, what's to say, or who's to say, that ghosts don't evolve in their own plane, in their own energy field, however that may be. So if there is a ghost, let's say, that's stuck here for 500 years or 1,000 years, maybe they started out as like a residual, or maybe they started out as like a blip on the radar, and now they've evolved into something that's walking and talking, and we have the ability to communicate with.
Very good point.
I guess, yeah, that's a possibility.
Now, what else could we detect these evolved ghosts with, Chris?
We have other equipment.
Yes, we do. We use EVPs, audio recorders, which, whether you know it or not, EVPs stand for Electronic Voice Phenomenon. And people say this all the time, Electronic Voice Phenomenon. That's disembodied voices imprinted onto tape. Brooke, I know you're an EVP lover. I mean, any investigation we go on, that's your main thing. Like, I want to do an EVP session. I want to do an EVP session. What is it about EVPs that intrigue you so much?
Well, I feel like I used most of my senses during a paranormal investigation, but I feel that if I catch an EVP, that's proof that I can show somebody, or, you know, show that something actually did happen to me, besides me telling you, hey, Chris, I went to the Shanley and I heard a door rattled. You're like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah,
but I don't have proof.
Yeah, Brooke, that's great. Yeah.
Exactly. But if I had caught that on tape, or if I was able to catch somebody, you know, saying a name or something while that was happening, it's more proof for the field.
Now, here's my problems with I have several problems with EVPs.
Contamination.
Well, contamination is one. That's the most obvious. But, like, all right, radio waves, television waves, you know, this stuff is bouncing around in the air constantly. What's not to say that you're not just picking up, you know, pick up a random word? It's not, you know, a broadcast from friggin' 30 years ago in Australia.
Because it's energy that's still around, because energy doesn't disappear.
So, like, to you, like how would you argue against that? Like, you're saying, okay, it's energy, it's a ghost, and it's talking to me. And I'm like, well, it's... You know, maybe it's a radio broadcast.
Right, and it very well can be. And the most that I'm frustrated with is every time we do these investigations, there's often a lot of people with us. So right then and there, that contamination makes it very difficult for me to determine if something's an EVP.
Unless it goes like, Brooke, get out.
Well, that's right. The thing. Like, if you have a communication with something and you get the EVPs that is communicating back and forth with you, a lot more credible than just picking up an auto. Oh, it said no.
Right.
Really? You
right.
know?
Did it?
I mean, the way I do it is when I do my EVP review, is I try to listen for something that's on a different level than the other noises in the room. So I can eliminate traffic or other people speaking or whoever's with me, or some like furniture moving or whatever. I kind of hear it on a different sound level And then that's when I'll bring it to you guys' attention and see what you think of it.
I mean, I've heard EVPs, Class A, Class B, I guess you can call them. Class C, obviously, I'm not hearing anything because those are really debatable. It's like, it's static, you know what I mean? Class C is pretty much static.
Right.
But am I convinced that that's, you know, a spirit trying to talk to us? No.
Your spirit?
Spirit?
What Class A have you heard?
There's actually some, and they're in our episode, and they're actually on the website for the Shelling Hotel. There's some really decent Class A EVPs on there.
Okay.
We don't collect a lot of EVPs personally. We throw out a lot of stuff that other people would say are EVPs because we're very, I mean, very picky. And I'm not putting anybody, any other groups down. It's just like, if I want, you know what? You know what EVP I'm going to get? When it then goes, Chris Mancuso, you're a jerk. You know, wow, that's an EVP. That's how I'm calling me out. You know what I mean?
Well, we actually go through a lot of trouble to debunk stuff, whereas most people go through a lot of trouble to prove that it's a ghost.
Right.
You know what I mean? People go out of their way. That's definitely a ghost talking. It's definitely this. Where we're like, let's try to find 500 reasons that it's not a ghost. Right.
The paranormal is always the last kind of explanation we'll come to.
Well, right. We always have that extra edge of having it on videotape.
That too.
Where a lot of groups don't use, you know, cameras to debunk things, we're able to do an EVP session while the camera's rolling and able to watch both things simultaneously and see.
And I can't tell you how many times that potential EVP was me moving around with the camera while trying to whisper a direction. And I, you know, for me personally, I got to get out of that, like, because I'm filming, I'm in film mode, and I'm whispering, like, you know, Brooke, move over to the left. I can't do that because then, wow, that's an EVP. No, that's Chris. You know what I mean? And it's happened at least a dozen times. And every time, I'm like, we got an EVP. And then Brian, we go back to the table, he's like, nope, that's you. I'm like, damn it!
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And just so you guys know that I'm not so EVP happy, if I do 4 to 6 hours worth of EVP collection, if you want to say that, maybe I'll find one thing in four or five sessions
that's
and
true.
One little 5-second clip, and I'll be like, guys, what do you think of this? I'm not even saying it's an EVP. I'm saying it's a possible EVP.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, EVPs, I've said it before, and numerous other people have said it. I think EVPs are very subjective, you know?
Everybody hears a different
thing. Everybody hears something different. I've heard other people's EVPs that, let's say, Brian or Brooke or Jason heard something totally different than what I heard. So it's all kind of subjective to that.
I agree.
Again, now we're talking about something that's been around for a long time. EVPs were actually, I think, popular in Europe in like the 60s and 70s. And not so much in America until after that. Now we did another kind of old piece of equipment that we use. Brooke, why don't you tell us about a new piece of equipment that people use in paranormal investigating?
Okay, well, another piece of equipment that we have seen in use, although we don't have one on the team, is the Ovilus, or the digital dowsing rod, you know, so to speak. And it's a handheld device that's supposed to pick up speech and phonetic speech from the immediate environment, and it has different modes, and I know that the most popular mode most people use is the dictionary mode, where the Ovilus contains 500 plus English words that are supposed to spit out a word or a phrase here and there that it's supposedly getting from the environment and that may or may not be paranormal.
Who I know that's a pretty recent invention. Do you know who developed that?
Bill Chappelle was the creator of
Dave
the
Chappelle?
Ovilus.
Chappelle Show.
And
it's a ghost, bitch.
It actually was designed to be an entertainment device. If you go to the website,
kinda like a Ouija board, I guess.
In a way, yeah. If you go to the website and you read up on the Ovilus, it has like I guess the instruction manual. It will say in you know bold face and starred and underlined and everything else. This you know device is intended for entertainment use.
Now
only,
it thinks. Now the thing is, it has these words in there, and if something floating around sounds like that word, it'll spit it out. Is that what
it's hard to say how that thing works. I mean, I've seen it in operation several times. Sometimes people are talking and it will almost repeat things.
See, that's what I'm talking about. So if you said the word good, it should say the word good because
not
it's
that it should, but sometimes it does. It could. It's possible.
And sometimes get that vibration.
Sometimes you could be saying nothing. You could be dead silent, and it just starts spitting out words for no reason.
Right.
Now,
right.
I think the theory behind this is that a spirit can manipulate, I guess, some of that technology to form words or to form a sentence, which, I mean, personally, I don't understand it. You know, unless this ghost has, like, a master's in electronics, like, I know I probably couldn't do that.
But
you know
if, it could, if it could manipulate that, then it would definitely be easy to manipulate a remote control of a television and make the channels just change and change and change.
Why not?
That seems a lot easier than saying, like, hello, my name is Alice.
But the thing is, if it is a spirit that's trying to communicate, I guess, they could say, well, here we're giving you something to use to try to communicate with us, to try to make a full sentence.
Now, we saw an ovulus in use on the USS Constellation. Thank you, Dana, who had one.
Dana, it's you.
We, unfortunately, didn't have a lot of luck with it that night. Not to say that it doesn't work and not to say that it's not something we don't want to try again, but so far, what I've seen with the ovulus is I've been very skeptical of it, mostly because it has a limited vocabulary. There's a limited dictionary that's pre-programmed, and that I have a problem with as far as, you know, credibility and stuff. It just, you know, why maybe the spirit wants to talk about their Aunt Hilda, and Aunt Hilda isn't two of the words that are, you know, in the dictionary, and it can't say that.
Can it make up words?
I don't know.
That's hard. I'm not
maybe
very
that's
familiar
the ovulus,
with the ovulus,
too.
I'm not very familiar with it. I mean, I've seen it in operation a couple times. I'm still curious about it, although I must say I'm not impressed by it. On all the times I've seen it, it hasn't impressed me. But I'm a pretty hard person to impress as far as stuff like this goes. Another thing that people go wild over this, because everybody has one, a K2 meter. K2 meter was actually first made popular, I think Chris Fleming used it in one of his investigations. So people see it on television, oh, I need a K2 meter. And honestly, all a K2 meter is an EMF detector with colored lights on it.
Exactly.
You know what? I don't know how much K2s go for because we don't have one. But we have a $20 EMF detector. It's called the Elf Zone. It's got a red, a yellow, and a green light on it. Green obviously means it's clear. Then there's yellow, which is a caution light, and a red, which is like, whoa, dude, high EMF. The premise is the same. And I would actually say that probably the Elf Zone might be a little better in the fact that you don't have to hold the button down.
Right.
With the K2, you have to physically hold this button down. So now if you take your finger off of it or your finger shakes, you're going to get a little spike. Either that or I see people put coins in it all the time. Now you're putting a piece of metal in there. Couldn't that affect it too?
Well, I have a problem with the K2 for that exact reason. I mean, all of the years that now we've seen it on TV and, you know, I think that by now, they should be able to develop a K2 meter where you don't have to hold the button down or stick a penny in it to get it to work. I mean, come on now. Let's develop something else that, you know, you turn it on like an EMF detector and use it the same way.
It's called the Elf Zone, and you can probably get one for like $15 to $20. You know what I mean? And you don't have to hold the button down. And there's no reason if a ghost is going to talk to the EMF detector, it's going to move the lights from green to red. They can't do it on the Elf Zone.
Yeah, and also every time you buy one, they donate $5 to elves.
No, seriously, like there's nothing that there's a lot less chance for human mess up. Let's say, you know what I mean. So that's why I would use the Elf Zone as a K2 in place of a K2 because it's just the same thing. And people have asked me about that before, and I've said, look, this is the same thing. You know, it's just not as fancy looking.
Well, I think that's fascinating because I've used my EMF detector as a K2, if you want to be, you know, kind of technical, where I'll have it in a room and the readings are basically, you know, stable. And I'll start talking and supposedly something is in the room. It'll start moving the numbers on my EMF detector, but not as an EMF detector would normally work. It's just using it as a form of communication.
Right. So, I mean,
it doesn't matter if there's numbers or lights or sound. It's all the same thing.
It's all the same thing. It's just, you know what? If you have an EMF detector, there's no reason for you to have a K2 meter. If you have a K2 meter, yes, use it as an EMF detector too. It's the same damn thing, you know?
Right.
Anything else that I think we really need to talk about? We've spoken about Frank's Box on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Also known, some people call it the Telephone to the Dead. It was actually developed by Frank Sumption. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's made some of these boxes and given them out to people. And people have altered AM/FM radios, and they're called Radio Shack hacks.
Right.
And basically all that does is it scans through the stations really fast, and you're picking up supposedly voices.
Right.
From what I've heard of the Radio Shack hacks or the Frank's Box or whatever you want to call it, because it's pretty much all the same thing, to me it just sounds like you're picking up, you know, pieces of voices that will form words, or one word from this station, a half a word from another station, mixed with a half a word from another station. It's like, ooh, it's a ghost who said that. But other people have said you're not supposed to listen to those voices. You're supposed to hear something either above or below or underneath that kind of static, and that's what you're really listening for.
And supposedly that some of these Frank's boxes have enabled spirits to come through and say people's names, first and last names, and that's why they believe that they work. I personally haven't seen it happen yet, but not to say it's not possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see it really work, but I have yet to be convinced. But I'm one of the hard people to convince.
You wouldn't be scared to death if that thing said your full name? Like, I wouldn't want it to say my name. Like, you'd actually want this thing to say your name.
Actually, yeah.
And you
I'm
could,
not saying
and
I wouldn't
could,
be scared
afterwards.
And you
could go home at night and lay there and go, I'm not going to be terrified every night for the rest of my life.
No, that, you know what? That's probably when, like, I flee the room, run to the nearest church and go, you know, start crossing myself and stuff like that.
Oh, Lord, I'd be scared.
Well, to basically sum up the whole hour that we've just talked about, I'm going to use a basic quote from Lisa Ann. Lisa Ann says this to me all the time, and I think she's right on the money.
Stop calling me. You walked right into that one.
SpiritQuestHealingCenter.com, by the way, for Lisa Ann. But she always says that she thinks that we're right on the verge of making progress, of being able to communicate with you know, spirits with this equipment, but we're not there yet.
I think it's pretty good. So, we'd like to pimp out something else before we go.
Yeah, actually, the Scared Crew is going to be at the Shanley Hotel on Halloween.
Halloween night, the Shanley
Halloween
Hotel.
Halloween night, October 31st. It's a Saturday this year. If you want, come get your ticket. Lisa Ann is going to be there with Old Hip. They're going to be doing a radio broadcast, a live radio broadcast from the Shanley Hotel.
Also, people who are at the Shanley Hotel will get to meet and greet the Scared Crew. Most of us will be there. And we're going to show our Shanley episode. So you guys will get a little premiere of the Shanley episode.
They're going to be doing their Paranormal Outsider radio show. Lisa Ann will be heading up a past life regression seminar. And there are very limited tickets. So if you want, go to www.shanleyhotel.com and you can purchase them right off the website.
There's also going to be I believe there's a costume party there.
Yes, there is.
And there's going to be, I guess, a prize for the best costume.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go dressed as myself, so I'm sure to win. At midnight there's going to be a ghost hunt, so it's going to be a lot of fun, and we hope you guys can join us at the Shanley Hotel, and join us next week for more Scared in the Airwaves. Have a good night, everybody.
Bye.
Listening to the best in talk radio on Dark Plains Radio on darkplainsradio.com. The best of all worlds, including paranormal, politics, sports, or anything of interest around the world. Listen into Between Two Worlds Radio with Derek White, Sky Cloud, a talk show interviewing a variety of paranormal friends and strange events. Psychic medium and paranormal investigator Derek White Sky Cloud will be doing his mediumship messages on darkplainsradio.com. Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern. It's a howling great time. That's Dark Plains Radio on darkplainsradio.com. The best of all worlds in talk radio.